Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever in the world you are. I hope this podcast finds you happy and healthy. Welcome to episode 19 of Stemming from Africa. First of all, this is episode 19. It's one episode to 20. And I'm so happy. I'm so excited about it because I'm really trying to be consistent. And I know I missed a month, but still, 20 episodes is a big deal for me. So this week, I have so much to say for the intro, but I will try to keep it as short as possible with everything I have to say. First of all, we need new leaders because honestly, everything is so expensive in this country. Like, there's no fuel this last week. There's no milk. Everything is so freaking expensive. Like, 1,000 bob will be three things. Like, you literally buy three things and then there's no money left. And I'm wondering how people survive when they were barely surviving before and the salaries they were making, but like particularly poorer people in a society. Milk is now 65 bob for half a liter, which is insane to me. And how are people going to survive? You know, it's just like, it's mind-blowing that we have leaders who don't care. They literally don't give two shits about how we get through life or how expensive things are or that we can't afford basic things, that we can't afford healthcare, that there's no milk, that there's no fuel, that literally everything has gone up and people are just struggling to survive. It's baffling to me that our leaders don't care. Although I guess I shouldn't really be surprised because these are the people we've been having. So this being an election year, I really hope that, and I'm not holding my breath, but I really hope that we're able to have better people. Not holding my breath because I'm seeing the same people on the ballots and it's just not seeming to me like there's hope in the horizon. But I'm trying not to be apathetic. And when I do feel that way, I try not to spread it, so I keep it to myself. So yeah, do what you need to do to survive. Except stealing. Try not to commit crime. Yeah. Thank you to all our listeners, new and old. I recently found out that my mother listens to my podcast. So, hey, mom, thank you. And my sister also. Hey, thank you so much. It's a bit strange to me to have my mom listening. I don't know why, because I talk to my mom about pretty much everything. But it's still a bit weird for me to have her listening. So, mom, if you're listening to this, just know it's a bit weird, but I appreciate it so much. Thank you. I love you. My thoughts are a bit mixed up today, but we're going to get through it. So, highlights. I have no highlights because we're suffering in this country. That's what we're doing, suffering. Thoughts. Actually, have a very important issue to address this week. So, April is Adenomyosis Awareness Month. And for those who don't know, adenomyosis is a condition where the tissue that lines your uterus, what normally sheds, infiltrates into the muscles around your uterus. And it's something I have. So I grew up with painful periods from my very, very first period. I think I had my first period when I was 14, almost 15. And I remember even then having extremely painful periods. Like, I would be curled up in bed with a hot water bottle and everything, and nothing ever worked. Like, literally nothing worked. And then I went to school, and in school they said, oh, you know, you shouldn't sleep when you have like painful periods, or you shouldn't take painkillers, which when I thought about it later is the most absurd thing you can tell someone in pain, to not take painkillers, because what kind of nonsense is that? And the reason that they said that was apparently because you will become addicted to medication. And now as a doctor and as a person who has been through that pain, I'm like, you, unless you're taking, I don't know, morphine, because more often than not, you're just taking paracetamol, which, to be honest, didn't really help me. So I grew up just knowing that I would have painful periods forever. So a lot of times when you tell people you have painful periods, they're just like, oh, that's just how it is. That's just, you know, you need to be strong. Women go through that. But adenomyosis is a condition where you have extremely painful periods. Like, I would have so much pain that literally anyone who would be around me around that time would realize And for so long, I thought that it was just me who was a weakling. I was like, oh, I'm just not able to bear pain. Nothing would work. Hot water bottles, I would take painkillers, I would, I don't know, do exercise, which helped a bit. I would satisfy all my cravings. So if it was chocolate, I would eat all the chocolate in the world, then my face would break out and nothing really worked. And then in my fourth year in med school, I was in so much pain that I nearly missed my final exam. And my boyfriend at the time, who's now my husband, was like, okay, this is too much. Let's just go to the gynecologist and see what's up, because this isn't normal. So we went and she sent us for a scan. And when the scan was being done, the ultrasound, the technician was like, oh, you must have really painful periods. And I said, yeah. And it was such a relief, because for so long, everybody had told me that women are supposed to have pain during their periods. That's just how it is. So for someone to be like, oh no, this isn't normal. Like, the pain you have is valid. It's not, you're not making it up in your head. You're not being, you know, soft or spoiled. Like, you actually have very painful periods. It's not all in your head. Like, this is a valid thing. I felt so relieved. I felt like I wanted to cry, because I was just, I wasn't making it up in my head. And I was put on medication, and then it subsided quite a bit, but I've still had it on and off. Something that a lot of people told me and that I read for long and I didn't believe was, okay, you know, after you get pregnant, it gets better. And I was a bit skeptical of it, because I'd had so many, when you do this, it'll get better, when you do this, it'll get better. But it really did get better after I had my child. Now I don't have very painful periods. I can manage them. I actually manage them with paracetamol. So I take a Panadol and the pain will go, which never used to happen before. So yeah, this is not to say that you should have a child. This is just to say, the moral of the story is that if you're having very painful periods, or if you feel like something is wrong with your body, you should go have it checked and persist in getting treatment, because you really do know your body better than other people. And especially, I think for women, the narrative that you just must suffer, like pain is part of life. You know, people will tell you, oh, you know, beauty without pain is unachievable, like life without pain. And that doesn't mean that you can evade pain, but the idea that you must suffer in all instances in your life is just absurd. There is pain that is abnormal. So yes, on Adenomyosis Awareness Month, I thought I should share my story and encourage any of you who have abnormal pain to go get checked and just see what's up. I think that's all. I've already spent a lot of time on that. I also wanted to say a huge thank you to everybody who has sent me messages. This week I got the sweetest message from one of my classmates about how listening to the podcast has helped her realize that you don't have to have everything figured out. And people really have everything figured out. And she was so young. She's like, you know, I'm 25 and I thought I would have everything figured out. And I was like, yeah, I'm 30 and I don't think I have anything figured out. So I don't think that you're on the wrong track, as long as you're trying to work towards something. It's not like you're just sitting there waiting for something to happen without any effort. So thank you for the messages that you guys send. They're honestly so affirming and so encouraging. So on days when, like today, when I'm doing this recording at 2 a.m. and we'll probably be editing until 4, when I'm not so sure that I want to put out an episode, I remember that there are people who listen and there are people who give me feedback. I'm eternally grateful. I'm so, so deeply thankful for your presence. Thank you so much for listening. On to this week's podcast. So, by the way, this seems to be an engineer's podcast. Thank you for all the engineers who come, and thank you for sharing your contact, and thank you for listening. Still want to have a lot more people in STEM, but for the last few episodes and this episode as well are all engineers. This week's guest is Jemima, who is an engineer. She's a young engineer and she's very charismatic. I enjoyed speaking to her. She talks about her struggle being a young woman in engineering, being one of two students who are female in her class and having to navigate the job search as a young woman and how that goes, and being street smart. She was such a joy to speak to. So let you listen to this week's episode and I'll see you on the other side.
My name is Jemima Ogutu. I am from Western Kenya, born and raised. I currently live in Nairobi. I work at Coca-Cola Beverages Africa, Kenya. I am a last born in a family of four, a very happy and blissful family of four. I have one charming brother. I have two amazing and ambitious sisters, one of which is an engineer in the Kenya Navy. I think I took after her, like my elder sister. That's why she inspired me to take up engineering. I am a lover of nature. I love everything nature. I love interior design. Currently, I've been into human psychology and human behavior, just understanding how human beings think. And I'm currently reading 48 Laws of Power.
Thank you. Welcome. I have so many things. First of all, your sister is, your whole family seems to be very like STEM list, you know, so that's interesting. Also, it's funny because I've had so many engineers on this podcast, they overpower the doctors, which is saying a lot because I'm a doctor and I tend to have a lot of doctors. What's your role where you work?
Where I work, I'm a mechanical engineer, but a graduate in training, management graduate in training. My role majorly is actually leaning towards leadership in the sense that I'm in charge of the shop floor workers, the level one workers, probably just operations, leadership, taking care of ensuring the operations are right, ensuring they are working on time, they're meeting their deliverables, ensuring all the engineering KPIs and deliverables are actually achieved. Basically, my junior leadership position.
When somebody hears Coke or Coca-Cola, they automatically think drinks. What role does an engineer play in the production of soda?
Oh my God. An engineer actually plays 80% in the production of soda. It's so huge. You actually open a Coke bottle, but you actually don't know what happens behind the scenes. It's amazing what happens behind the scenes, from the automation, from the production of the actual soda, the maintenance of the machines, from the testing chemical engineers, the testing of the soda to ensure that the chemical components of the sodas are suited for consumption, from these other supporting entities of production like boilers, like electricity, energy, steam, that actually play a huge part in production. It's basically, engineers basically do 80% to ensure that the soda actually comes out great on the other side. It looks so good, but behind it, there's a lot of grease, there's a lot of spanners, there's a lot of lab tests, there's a lot of energy regulations. There's just so much behind the scenes.
What's your favorite part of the job for you?
The favorite part of the job for me, I would say, is people. Weird enough, when I joined Coke as an engineer, I didn't imagine I would be close to people. I was very shy. I was the typical stereotypic engineer who had this personality where I'm just, it's about me. I'm just doing what I'm supposed to do. I'm handling the machines. But now I got to interact with so many people across so many fields that I actually fell in love with the people part of my job. Like the daily interaction where I have to talk to somebody when we are solving a problem, where I have to, during meetings, where we're supposed to brainstorm and come up with solutions. It's majorly the interaction and the nature of my business, the nature of that business, it requires a lot of teamwork because it has a lot of variables and a lot of dynamics and it incorporates a lot of fields. It's just not engineering. Like you have to, biochemists are involved, food scientists, engineers of different fields, chemical, mechanical, electrical. the people from the logistic procurement, there's so much teamwork that is needed, which has actually made me fall in love with that part of the job. The people interaction and just interacting with people from different backgrounds, different fields, different levels. It's the people interaction that's just a huge breakthrough for me.
It's so interesting you said that, because I think in a previous episode I talked about how I used to really like people, but I think because my job deals with people so much, like that's when you're a doctor, that's what you do. I now just value my time when I'm not talking to people. And so it's fun. It's interesting to hear that you've come from a place where it was just very much not dealing with people to actually embracing the part of your job that deals with people and loving that. That's interesting perspective over there. But earlier you talked about your sister and how she kind of inspired you towards your journey. So we want to hear more about your journey, where you came from, and how you ended up picking mechanical engineering as your life's work this far.
Actually, that's a very interesting question, because growing up, I've always just had an instinct that I wanted to be in the science field. Ever since I was a little girl in class four, I just loved science. I knew that there's no way I wouldn't be in the science field, because the alternative, I wasn't good at. I was horrible at English. I was horrible at history, social studies. I was so bad. So I've always known that I wanted to be in the science field. So growing up in primary, part of high school, I wanted to be in the medical field, the science medical field. I wanted to be a doctor. It's noble. You know, you watch this ER, emergency rooms, and you're just like, wow, this is not so much. And it's so cool. And then my sister joined campus when I was in Form 1, and she went to study telecommunication engineering. And I think through her, I got a glimpse of what engineering is like. And I started questioning my desire to become a doctor. Like, I would visit her in college. I would see her notes. I would hear her stories. And then, of course, since she was in the engineering world, I would be with her sometimes when she's there. So I started leaning more towards the technical side, the technical field, other than the medical field. And after high school, I just decided, I think medicine is not for me. I want to become an engineer. And I landed in mechanical engineering because I had two choices. I was to choose between electrical and mechanical. I just didn't love electricity. It just scares me. I loved how mechanical is so huge. It's so real. Like, we are doing automotive. Look at the cars. Like, it's more, I could actually see mechanical stuff than electrical stuff. And that's how I landed and I became a mechanical engineer.
I know you're still young in your career, but have you faced any challenges that you think have contributed to where you are so far?
Yes, I have, of course. I've faced so many challenges. But I think the biggest challenge for me, as cliche as it might sound, is actually being a woman in a male-dominated field. In campus, we're just the two of us in a class of about more than 40. And it's tough. It's tough because sometimes you feel like you need to work twice as hard to prove yourself to be equally worthy compared to your male counterparts. Then when you go out there in the market, first of all, there's that reaction you get from people. When you're applying for a job, they ask you, are you able to do this job? They question your credibility because you're female. And there's a time I went to an attachment in some company and there were no washrooms for female washrooms. It was tough. You know, it sounds subtle. These things sound so subtle, but it's the accumulation of these things that make it so huge. It's the day when you're supposed to go to work and somebody questions your credibility. It's when you're going somewhere and you're working with guys and there's no washroom for you because females don't work there. When you're supposed to work twice as much to prove yourself as worthy. it's just the accumulation of these small things that make it so tough. So I would say it's actually my biggest challenge has been the gender difference. Just working in a very, very, very male-dominated field. It's quite a challenge.
It's interesting you bring up the toilet issue, because two previous engineers who I've had have actually spoken about the same thing, where they have, let's say, long days in the field and you're in your period and there are no female washrooms. And it's like, okay, so now what am I supposed to do? Because nobody ever thought about that. Nobody ever thought, oh, there might be a woman who has a period and so she would need to use a bathroom, or even just a different bathroom from men, because, you know, logistics and everything. But you said two girls in your class.
Yeah, actually, we're two of us. Just two of us.
What advice would you give to people or women coming into the field to how in dealing with those challenges? How did you deal with challenges from campus and going on to job applications and in the position you are now? What are some of the things that can help someone coming into that position?
I would say, first of all, just do it. Don't think about it. Don't overthink it. Just join it. And how you'll face the challenge, first of all, what I did, we formed a community of women. I'm so close to the other female in my class. We actually are so close still to that. I consider her my best friend. We formed a community of women where we will support each other. You know, we'll work, since we face the same challenges, we'll confide in each other. We'll be each other's support system because we get each other. And that also applied to people in other, who are studying other courses like electrical, chemical, and was in campus. We had our own society of women where we'll hold each other's hands. And it really actually helped, because you have that feeling of belonging, because you feel like you're not going through it alone. And then when you go out here, it's still the same. Even in Coca-Cola, I'm very close to other women in STEM, other female engineers. It's like we have a pact that cannot be broken. It really helps a lot, because when we are facing challenges, it's easier for us to even speak out, because it's a collective voice than if you're doing it alone. So the first major one is teamwork, community. Stick with each other, join other, even if you don't have them around you. On online, there are so many female engineering platforms, so you can join other women who are actually facing the same things. It really helps a lot. And then the second one is just believe in yourself. As cliche that as that might sound, it's actually what has helped me come this far. Because when I'm applying for a job and somebody questions my credibility, it doesn't really get to me so much, because deep down in my core, I believe I have earned this position. I believed I graduated, I passed, I am an engineer, I don't care what you're saying. So if you question my credibility, and deep down in my core, I actually believe in myself, deep down in my core, I understand my journey, it doesn't really get to me that much. It's really huge. Just believing in yourself. Like when you're going out there and you're in a workplace, you're the only female, and you're supposed, people think you cannot do that job, or think you don't deserve to do that job, or they think you have actually gotten that job because you're a woman, not because you're good enough for it. It just comes down to your belief, your truth, that you're capable, you're here, you have earned this position, you have earned this space. It really helps to just silence the noise and keep doing and going for what you want.
I keep referencing past episodes, especially with engineers, because it seems to be something that cuts across. Everybody's like, just do it. Just, you know, hunker down and do what you need to do, because that's just how you power through, and also how you end up getting to places where you can then put other women in position. I like that you spoke about community, because that's something that I value myself. And I think that women forming communities is so important, because, like you said, we're able to speak collectively, we're able to share information, we're able to see where there are disparities. And Something that's come up repeatedly on the podcast is like the importance of mentorship. So in your journey, do you have any mentors who helped you? And if so, how did they help you get through certain phases in your life?
Yeah, actually, I've had so many mentors. The first one is my elder sister, Faith. Shout out to her, wherever she is. I'm so sure she'll watch this episode. She has been my first mentor because she's the first engineer I've actually been in contact with. The first one who actually introduced me to this field. And throughout my journey, I've had other mentors, not necessarily in the engineering field. I've had mentors in the HR field. Like recently, I have a mentor who is a HR personnel in my company. She's actually helped me to develop my people skills, my communication skills, my leadership skills. And currently I have another mentor who is also an engineer as myself. They have really helped because they have made my journey shorter. Because they have actually shown me there's some hurdles that I have avoided because they have actually shown me, they have gone through that journey and they're like, Jemima, don't do this. This is the outcome. Or Jemima, this is the shortest route to getting there. Jemima, join this club. It's going to help you do this. Or Jemima, read this book. It's going to help you with this. It's really huge. It's really, really important. And I will advise anybody out there who doesn't have a mentor, get one. It doesn't necessarily have to be somebody you know, because I also have mentors who I don't know. I just follow online, like people I listen to their podcasts, people I listen to their YouTube channels. I consider them mentors because they give me information that helps me to do things that I would not have done if I didn't have that information. I don't know if I'm making sense, but it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody you know personally. If you can't find one, it can even be somebody you look up to out there somewhere online, YouTube or a podcast somewhere. But it's really, really important. And I've had several ones and I owe them. I'm here because they have given me nuggets of wisdom that have really made me grow so fast in my career and in my personal life and even in my leadership qualities.
Yeah, I completely agree with you about having mentors who you don't necessarily know. There's so many people who in my head were friends because I follow them, I listen to their podcasts, I watch them on YouTube, or I follow them online, and I'm like, yeah, in my head, you're my mentor. You don't know it, but but you are, because
they
just, you know how you, like there's some podcasts I listen to every week and I feel like my tank has been filled again. Because I could be facing a certain challenge or I don't know how to go in a certain direction. And miraculously, somebody will just speak about it that week and they will have dealt with it or be in the process of dealing with it. And it's like, oh, okay, so first of all, I'm not alone. But secondly, somebody else has walked this journey and is willing to share their insights so I can avoid the mistakes that have been made and either make new mistakes and find someone else, like guide someone else, or not make any mistakes at all and just make the journey smoother for me. So yeah, I like that you spoke about that, because that's definitely something that I do. When earlier when we were speaking before I started recording, we spoke about street smartness and how that has helped you. I wanted to delve a bit more into that because we were speaking about how for a lot of us Kenyan doctors, previously, the path was pretty well laid for us. You know, you finished school and then you had internship and then you got employed and then you went and did your master's. And it was not, you know, completely smooth, but it was far smoother than it is now. Because now, I mean, so many of us are tamaking, so many of us are not able to go to school. Our school fees, like for master's students in Kenya, went up over three times what it was. So yeah, how do you think, because this is something you talked about, how do you think like your street smartness has helped you survive? And can you give us examples of that from your experience?
Oh my God. I can literally write a whole booklet. Actually, where I come from, in my community, we call it audacity. That's that's our lingo for street smartness. We call it audacity. Oh my God. Like, I have used audacity everywhere I've been. It's really important. I think, first of all, it was in campus, definitely. Oh my God, engineering is the ghetto. It's the ghetto. It was so hard. It was so hard. And you just had to find, I think that's where I was introduced to being street smart. Okay, street smartness does not necessarily have to be, according to me, it doesn't have to be smartness in the street. It just has to be being smart in an unconventional way. That's what I would describe being street smart is. So first of all, when I was in campus, as I said earlier, the engineering was the ghetto. It was so tough. We had to find ways to survive. Like, just find ways of balancing the academic aspect of life and this other aspect, like your personal life, like your social life. You have to be very street smart about it, because you don't want your academic part of it to suffer, and you also want this other, your social life and your personal life, even your financial life, to thrive too. Like, just starting some businesses when you're still in school, joining social clubs when you're still in school, and just balancing all that really sharpened the street smartness aspect of it. Then when I came out here, my God, tarmacking is real. Looking for jobs, it's real. Like, putting yourself out there, applying for those jobs, and that called for branding, because no matter how good you are, you have to package yourself in a way that when somebody sees you, you have to sell yourself as a product. And that calls for a lot of street smartness. I had to apply for so many jobs. I had to improve my branding. I had to take up things that are not necessarily academic to boost my CV. And of course, when you're applying for jobs, at that time you don't really have a job, you have to survive too. Like, just doing side hustle, some online writing. Yeah, that also really contributed a lot to my street smartness. It's like heightened further my being street smart. Then after that, after you even get that job, when you're inside that job, you know, there's the academic part of it. Yes, you're good. You have technical skills, but there's so much that comes to play in you being good at your job. As I said earlier, there is branding. There is your relationship with people. There's how you play your cards, strategy. You know, like, how you react to people, how you pull your cards. Like, what are you going to do? What if you do something, what are you gaining from the whole experience? It's just a lot. Then I have actually, for the past 3 years, I've worked in, 2.5 years, I've worked in 3 companies. Applying for those jobs and attending those interviews, you also have to be street smart, because I believe attending interviews and it's an art per se. It's just not you showing up and being asked questions and answering. It's a lot of human psychology. It's a lot of knowing what to say. It's a lot of knowing, this job expects me to do this. What am I supposed to say? Which cards am I supposed to pull here? Which personality am I supposed to show up in? It's just all that together has really made me understand that just knowing your job and just doing your job does not really count if you don't know other things about it. The social aspect of things, the financial aspect of things, the your relationships, they all come together to play in you being good at what you do. I don't, like, let me give an example at where I work. I'm good at my job, I believe so, as an engineer, but there are so many dynamics I have to consider while I'm working. First of all, people skills, how I interact with people. I need to understand my financial aspect. I'm earning a salary. How am I going to improve my life with this salary that I'm earning? I need to understand the social aspect of it. How do I have a work-life balance? Okay. If I want to start a business outside of work, how do I do that in a way that it will not affect my work and my business can also thrive? And I want to advance in my career. What cards am I going to pull? which mentor will I look for? Who will I befriend? What book will I read to be able to advance in my career? So it's a lot. Street smartness plays a lot in the betterment of anyone's life.
I'm glad you expounded on that, because there's so many things that I picked up, but like I had the same experience. So coming out of uni and going to practice medicine, I was like, yeah, I'm a doctor. I know my stuff. Let me go be a doctor. And then, you know, day one of internship, and you meet this nurse who, you know, doesn't take shit, doesn't want to hear anything. And you realize that the way to get her to work with you properly and make your life easier is to actually approach her in a certain way, not like sucking up, but also not being condescending. It's like a halfway point where you have to, like a sweet spot where you have to communicate with people. And that's also been like a really important lesson for me in communicating with people and dealing with people. And dealing with people in different states. So, for example, for me, I deal with people when they're sick, you know, when they're vulnerable. And sometimes, a lot of times when people are sick, or when children are sick, or a relative is sick, or, you know, a loved one, people lose their minds. And so it's easy to respond in anger in the way that they're giving you anger, because sometimes it's like, okay, working a 12-hour shift, I'm tired. I'm so out of it. I'm just so tired. And here is, you know, a loved one shouting at me, or I don't know, coming at me, you know, sideways. And the immediate urge is to just give back the energy you're getting. Yeah. And then you realize that that's not going to help anybody. And that's not just with patients, that's also dealing with workmates, dealing with seniors, dealing with juniors. So yeah, definitely having to deal with people is a skill that is so necessary. And I think that the sooner you learn how to do it, the better it is for you. So yeah, everything else you said, completely agree. That just really stood out to me, because it's something I've had to learn, like myself. And it's been a bit difficult in some places where someone will come at me a different way and I want to, you know, just beat them up. And
totally get it.
Have to act right. So yeah, that's been interesting. Also, when you spoke about finances, because only like in the past few years have I, you know, did it occur to me that, oh, I actually need to learn to, you know, make my money work for me. When you first start earning money, it's just like, yay, money, let's spend it. And then like a couple of years later, you're like, oh, shoot, I should have actually been doing something with that money that, yeah, I still got to enjoy my money, but I planned for a rainy day better, you know. So it's one of those things that I feel like in school, we should have dedicated financial classes, because honestly, these streets are rough. Yeah.
I know, right? There should be like 10 modules of financial lessons.
Give us that. Because honestly, it's just, yeah, when you're out here and figuring things out by yourself, it would be really helpful if you had things, you know, finances down, so that the other things that you have to learn on your own are just, you know, easier. Because honestly, this world just will throw you for a loop and you just have to figure things out. So yeah, that's,
I know.
It's
the ghetto.
I just wish we would learn. Aside from your career, what other interests do you have?
Yeah, aside from my career, okay, I said earlier, I love nature a lot. My God, it just grounds me. Like when I just like going out in the wild, hikes or riding, just walking in the parks. It grounds me and just reminds me of how beautiful life is, of how there's a greater power than I that is control of things. So nature hiking, have an interest in interior design. I know, I love interior design. I just love I love the science behind it, the science behind the color coordination, the textures of things. And I'm into, I've currently taken an interest in human psychology. I'm curious. I want to understand how human beings think. Why do people do what they do? You know, like, why do you have to get angry when I say the truth to you? I don't understand that. So I've been, that's something that's interesting me, human psychology a lot, interior design, nature. I'm currently reading a lot of books on human psychology, listening to podcasts on human psychology, listening to YouTube channels on human psychology and interior design, and just to understand how people think and how to make my space beautiful.
You're still young in the career, just meaning you've been here less than 5 years. You know, it's not like you finished yesterday. But what do you hope to achieve, or where do you see yourself in the next, say, 10 years?
I see myself in a managerial position. I want to get, for the next few years, I just want to establish myself and get a niche or space in the engineering field, be a go-to person in everything mechanical engineering. And then after that, probably get into managerial and mentorship. I really am so passionate about mentoring women to become everything they are called to be. It's just amazing to just see women blossom to be this, to be so much greater. It's just beautiful to watch. And I would love to impact that, the knowledge I've gained so far, to another woman, to enable them to be everything. So get into mentorship and probably managerial and leadership. I really love dealing with people too. And just, I think get into leadership and mentorship in the next 10 years. Leadership in the engineering space or in the business field, operations, manufacturing or engineering.
Now that you've spoken about mentorship and working in a managerial role, what would you do if you were given the chance? How would you change the landscape for women in engineering, starting from students as well as in workplaces? What are some of the things that you would change so that women coming behind you have an easier time?
First of all, I think I will start with the mindset. I feel like that's one of the things that's actually a huge hindrance in this field for females. We have not still gotten to that point where we are fully empowered to believe that women can be engineers and really do good at their job. Cutting across genders for female themselves and for the male counterparts too. We haven't gotten to that point where the mindset is fully liberal, where we believe that this space is accommodative for females too. Because the reason why I'm saying this is that I actually asked around. I was doing a poll recently. I had a male counterpart of mine who asked me, what did you want to be before you, when you grow up, then are you living your dream? And I was like, yes, I'm living my dream. And he said, you're the first engineer who's telling me that she's actually living her dream. Most of the female engineers I meet just stumbled upon engineering. They didn't want to be engineers at first because they felt it was hard. They felt it's going to be a tough space for them. And it just spoke to me in the sense that we are fast paced. We are in this women empowerment era, but there's some mindsets that, some barriers and mindset that still need to be broken. And I think it will be mostly just to let people know that, empower women and just make them understand that it's not as hard as they think it is. It's not as masculine as they think it is. They can come and bring their femininity in this field and make it thrive. It's not that masculine, it's not that hard, it's not that tough. Just break that barrier. And I feel like that will cut across even in the workplace, because there's a lot of stigma associated with female engineers in the workplace, in the sense that some people sadly still don't believe a woman can be a good engineer because they are female in some sectors. So just breaking that mindset, just making that mind shift, creating a lot of awareness. And of course, supporting women, talking to them and telling them it's fine. You can do this. When you want to talk to somebody, you can talk to this person. It will make a huge shift. So that the next chunk of girls joining this course, we'll approach it boldly, knowing that it's doable. It's not that tough as people tell them it is.
I hope you do end up doing all these things, because we definitely need to see more people. It's interesting because a lot of the women, I think I've said this before, but a lot of the female engineers who we've had, the engineers we've had, have spoken about that. I look forward to the day when there's less of a disparity. So like in medicine now, there are a lot of, you don't see those disparities so much overall, but you do see them in, you know, specific branches. So like when in specialties, but overall, as a profession, overall, there's not so much of a male-female disparity. It's higher up that you see it, but now there are more women going in. And I say this all the time, but the reason I started this podcast is so that people can listen and see and say, oh, okay, that person did it, so I can do it. So it's nice to see people who look like you and who have done things that you don't, that you want to do, but you don't have the belief in yourself. But yeah. So wrapping up this interview, what would you tell your 15-year-old self?
I'll tell my 15-year-old self not to be afraid, just live life. It's not that serious. It is serious, but it is not that serious. Like, things are going to work out for her. She's going to lose so many times, so bad that she'll want to give up, but she's also going to win. Then she's going to have doubts, self-doubts. There are some times she's going to think she can't do it, but there are some times she's going to do so well that she'll think she can be the president of the United States in the next 5 years. So I'll advise her to just live life unafraid, unapologetically. Go after what she wants to go after. If she wants to be an engineer, if she wants to be an artist, she should just go and do it unapologetically, unafraid. When she fails, it's okay for her to cry and wallow for a while, but she should get up and just live life. Life is for the living, and there is so much in store for her, a lot. Like, the world is so huge. There are so many countries, so many fields. There are so many people she's to meet. Life is beautiful, and she should live life unapologetically. She should follow her dreams and just do it unafraid. That's what I'll tell my 15-year-old. Life is beautiful. It's really good.
Love
both
it.
The sad and the happy times.
Both of them, yeah. Because there will be many.
Yeah. I know.
And my final question.
Uh-huh.
Repeating what your friend asked. Are you living your dream now?
Yeah, I can say I really am. Not in the sense that I'm not in the sense that I'm actually doing what I thought I was doing at 25. Oh my God, I've just said my age. But I feel like I'm living my dream. I feel like I'm comfortable where I am at. I feel like I'm enjoying the journey. I'm enjoying the hard times and the tough times. I'm loving the adventure of life in my career, in my personal life, in my social life. I must say I'm really happy. I'm really living my dream. Not how I thought it would have been, but I'm living my dream.
So that was the conversation I had with Jemima. I had a really good time speaking with her. I think the future is so bright with people like her in spaces where they want to improve and looking to be leaders. So the future is bright. I'm excited to see how young women in STEM shape the future. So yeah. Remember to follow the podcast. We are at STEM from Africa on Twitter and STEMming from Africa on Instagram. We will be on TikTok soon because I have given in to peer pressure. So I will be on TikTok soon enough. Also, if you'd like to be on the podcast, remember to sign up. The contact form is always in the description and it's also on our Twitter page. You can sign up and I will contact you. All you need to do is leave your details and I will do the rest. And finally, I will leave some information on adenomyosis, some resources that you can read and quick facts and things to help you know if you should probably go get checked. That's it for this week. Have a great weekend. See you next week. That will be all for this episode of Stemming from Africa. I hope you have a great weekend, and I hope to see and hear from you next Friday.